My name is Rob, and this is my weekly podcast. Each week, I sit down with a different guest, and we talk about things that you have been up to in the fandom. Are we going to talk about everything? Of course not. It's only an hour. Will we communicate effectively? It's a wheel of time. Probably not. But will we have fun? Most definitely. Welcome to Malkier's Wrap-Up. Hello, folks. Welcome back to Malkier's Wrap-Up. It's my first official recording of 2024. We've all turned a day in the calendar. You've got your snacks up there, hopefully, if you got it yourself, a snack calendar. My guest is nodding. They have a snack calendar. Did you get a snack calendar? Did it come?
I did, yeah.
Excellent.
It's hanging on my wall, and my children are staring at it every morning at breakfast.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. That is so good. Tom, I hope you're listening to that. Would they be staring next month when it's the two of you?
Yes, they're very excited about next month and Excellent. Also awkwardly embarrassed about next month.
But and awkwardly embarrassed.
Thankfully, well, it's the shortest month.
You can tell them that it will be, although it isn't a day longer this year than it usually is.
Bonus us.
Bonus you two, yes. Folks, if you couldn't work out from that beautiful voice there, my guest this week is no one else who could possibly start off the IEL part of the year than the wonderful and hilarious Queen of the Meluendos, Melindra.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Mel. How are you doing?
Good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. Happy snack year. I don't know. Yeah. We will do something to fill the year.
Happy snack here.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's we're gonna go with that. So yeah. Welcome, Mel. I'm doing a whole set of IEL episodes. Mel is first on the stabbing block, so to speak. Because just how scheduling worked out. So are you nervous, Mel?
Should I be?
I don't know. Should you be?
I'm just here to play. I don't know what's happening.
No, it's fine. It's fine. You don't need to be nervous. You're IEL. You can handle it. Yeah, folks, we're going to get to know Mel a little better today, but with a lot of IEL sort of theme to it. So we'll kick it off. We do have a couple of folks hanging out. We do have Doctor, as the text has just changed to, hanging out, and the Cheese Foldy themselves. And, a fellow Aiel has entered the chat as well. So, lots of people listening. We're going to kick it off. So, Mel, you role play as Melindra on Twitter Time.
Indeed.
And on Threefold Talk.
Yes.
In fact, to the degree where I'm not sure that I could possibly envision anyone else playing Melindra than you. So, I think there's like a combination question here, so perhaps you could, maybe it's like a two-parter, like,
okay,
why did you pick, when you set up your Twitter Time account or however you started doing the role-playing stuff in Wheel of Time, why did you pick Aiel? Like, why was that your choice?
So when I first joined Twitter of Time, like many people, I was a lurker for a little while. It's all kind of a mess now, but I tried to keep my Twitter accounts like topically separate. So I had kind of a politics Twitter account. And as the show was starting to come out and more show news was coming, like I would like read something from somewhere on Twitter and then random Twitter of Time people would like pop into my feed. And so I would kind of see them and like watch them. And then, eventually I can't even remember. I think it was 2021. I decided to make an account so that I could start following everybody over there. And I looked through who was there. I didn't quite understand everything about how Twitter of Time worked, but I was kind of got the gist that people picked characters and tried to pick characters that didn't have other people playing them. So I looked to see if there were any Shaiel accounts. And And of course, my first choice was actually Egwene, but there was already an Egwene. She's epic. And so I was like, okay, it can't be Egwene. Who else would I want to be? Let's play an Aiel. I love the Aiel. There's something about that group of people that speaks to me. I love the nonchalance about violence a little bit, because in some way it's like manifesting, like, at the time I was, you know, probably more angry about politics than was healthy, so I needed like some sort of like outlet to, like, you know, get be able to be angry without actually, you know, threatening real people. So there was that. And I also just always thought they were so funny in the books, and I love making people laugh. And so that's naturally what I went to. So I looked for Shaiel accounts, and I didn't see any Shaiel accounts. Granted, this I was very new. I didn't know Twitter at the time very much. And so I like kind of said hi and announced myself, and almost immediately people were like, oh my God. And they were adding to Grain and being like, you've got a competitor. And people were like, there's no way that this brand new account is ever going to trump to Grain. And I was like, oh no, what have I done? Like, Tigraine popped into my mentions, and she said something clever, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but I learned. I was like, I've clearly like touched a nerve without even meaning to, like, right when I started joining this community. I was like, I didn't come in to be controversial. I wasn't trying to like steal anybody else's lane or anything. And so I like thought about it for a week and looked up the other characters, and of course Bina Chied was already there, and there were Avienda accounts, and so I was like, what other Aiel would be really fun to play? And so Melinda came to mind because, are we full spoilers?
Yes, so we are full spoilers.
Okay, so Melinda came to mind because I thought it would be really fun to play with the duality of a person who, on one hand, pretends to be, you know, on the side of the light and has connections to the main characters. And there were already lots of Matt Cawthons out there. So I thought it would be fun to have, like, lots of Matt Cawthons to bounce off of. And then I also thought it would be fun to explore that, like, dark friend side of things as well, just because... you know, she's a really interesting character to me, and Robert Jordan didn't give her a lot in the books, so it gave me a lot of freedom to kind of develop my own persona around it. I didn't have to try and stick to something that was prescribed because she had a very small part of the book. So that appealed to me too, because it allowed the flexibility to improvise and play around within the world of the Wheel of Time, but without having to be you know, kind of focused in on one particular, like, through line that everybody knows everybody about already. So that's why I picked Mel.
Okay. That was kind of like the second part of that question. Like, why did you pick Aiel? And then it's going to be like, so why Mel specifically?
Yeah.
Interesting that you did look at, like, Tigraine accounts and then, like, Bane and Shead accounts and things like that. But obviously, yeah. Really there, so you went with the Mel.
Honestly, like, I don't know why it didn't occur to me to, if I was thinking about Shaiel, if I decided to be Shaiel, why I didn't look for Tigraine accounts. Like, I have no idea why I didn't. I just didn't. And I was like, okay. I was just looking for what characters were still kind of available and out there, and trying to pick something like that I was interested in, but wasn't like the top characters. And so that's why I picked Shaiel first, and then got immediately into trouble, and then did a sip. Like, I think my, I think that when I switched, I was like, I like played it like, ha ha ha, I fooled all of you. You thought I was Shaiel, but it was just actually me in disguise or something. I don't know. I said something like that. And then everyone's like, that's better. Good job.
So Twitter almost told you off when you started.
Yeah, they really did. Like, there were people who were vehemently defending Tigraine, and rightfully so. She's amazing. And I had just, like, didn't know that I stepped in it, like, right when I kind of, like, I wanted to join the community, and I immediately screwed up. Wow. But it all worked out fine.
But they allow multiple Matt accounts, but there can be only one Tigraine account. That's interesting.
Yeah. I think it's because Tigraine is, you know, like, she has an amazing presence on Twitter time, and she's so well respected and a good friend, and so people were just like, well, you just can't have that. It makes sense to have multiple mats, but multiple Tigraines seems weird. So
okay, fair enough. Yeah. I'm curious, when you read through the books, did you like Mel, or has she grown on you as a character since you chose to be Mel on Twitter?
Oh, good question. What I really liked about Mel when I first read the books was that kind of sex positive, like unashamedly herself, like, you know, willing to say exactly what she wants and tell Matt exactly what she wants, the way that she was trying to build Matt up in a world where he was feeling really down on himself. I mean, all of those things about that character intrigued me. But I would say, yeah, getting to play around with that character has made me like her more, because I mean, obviously I've invented backstories for her. And there have been multiple iterations of the backstories for her on Twitter of Time since I started playing around with this character. But what I really loved about what she did is she helped Matt realize that it's okay to stand on his own two feet and, you know, embrace who he is and embrace his strengths, which helped kind of launch him on his journey that turned him into the great captain that he was. Like, because before that he was kind of floundering, and he just needed someone, and she was kind of that sounding board for him to be like, nah, you're good on your own, you're great, you're fantastic, you can get some limelight for yourself. And then Matt went all Matt, so she built him up.
I honestly don't think I've ever appreciated the character of Melindra so much as in this particular moment.
Yeah,
and I'm not a Matt fan. It's not a dislike Matt, but I like Matt's, you know, like, there's a lot of bias out there.
Well, sure, I know, and I know.
You know, I fight against the Matt bias. Matt's not a bad character, but the Matt bias drives me crazy. But that makes me like Melindra a bit more, and thus like Matt a bit more as well. So
yeah, I think I get that Matt bias exists because he's an amazing character, and sometimes it's annoying to just hear so much about Matt. But I think of all the people, and maybe of, I mean, they all grow on amazing journeys, but I think Matt's journey is very satisfying. It's very satisfying to witness from a guy who was, you know, kind of at the absolute rock bottom to, you know, kind of using his strengths instead of ignoring his strengths, using his strengths to help serve the light and solve the problems and all that stuff, as opposed to having to reinvent himself to do that. Like, he already had it in him. He just needed to figure out that he was worth it and that he could use those things. And he found people, Matt, Talmanes, Aludra, people who appreciated that about him and helped lift him up to enable him to do the things that he was able to do. And I feel like Melindra was maybe the first on that journey. So that's something I really appreciate about that character. As small as her part was, there were so many sections where she was just lifting it up, and he was almost like embarrassed. Like, he didn't even want to hear it at the time, but then he got better and better about being like, yeah, I can do this.
That is a brilliant, brilliant way to describe their interaction, Mel. So, thank you. I am curious about the backstories that you mentioned just before. there's multiple backstories, apparently.
Yeah. So,
like, how did backstories come to be a thing? And maybe tell us about your favorite one or the funniest one, whichever one you want to share.
So I think Bina Chiad was the one. Yeah, it was her. She went to Robert Jordan's notes, and she went to Charleston, and she looked in the repository and she looked up what Robert Jordan wrote about Melindra in his copious notes, and it's literally just a maiden of the spear. Like, that's it. That's
yeah, it's
that's all he, that's as deep as he got.
That's so all he
that
wrote.
That left the floor completely open for me to just play and be silly and ridiculous. So one of the first, I mean, I flirted with all of the mats, every single one of them. I started feuds with, there are two Fortuana or Tuan characters. So I started feuds with both of them and Seleucia. So every time that we interacted, like we like shot fire at each other. And then for a while, for maybe maybe a year or two, and I don't remember which year, there was a Shaitan character.
Oh.
And Shaitan would pop into someone's thread and type in all caps. And so then I would act like a petulant, annoyed, embarrassed teenager whose dad was just like going off. So I developed this backstory where Shaitan was Melindra's dad. So like every time he would say something, I would try to like knock him down a peg through just like trolling him as like a teenager would troll their annoying father. So that was a backstory that played out for a while. Shaitan kind of disappeared, so we haven't, but whenever he pops up, sometimes we still banter back and forth.
That is great.
But that I think was the most fun back and forth we had. And then the backstory that led to my idol song from this past year kind of organically developed in the interactions of like watching first time readers read through the books and talk about how much they liked Melindra and Matt together, and then being betrayed and being upset, and then having conversations with them afterwards. We're like, what do you think happened? And why do you think she did that? And that sort of stuff. And that's one of the things I love about Twitter of Time is those moments of just like watching people read Fires of Heaven and just seeing them be like, no. And there's been a few people who have got on, like understood that betrayal very quickly, but most people it comes like as a complete surprise. So as someone who plays Mel, it's I'm very entertained by that and enjoy the conversations afterwards with them, and that led to me trying to like think about why she made the choices she did, and then developed this kind of reluctant dark friend backstory for her who
it's
fell
a beautiful
in love
parody as well.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoyed making it.
I remember when we unveiled it, it was brilliant. We got to watch the full thing. It was so good. Actually, made I don't like the original song that you parodied, made me like the song. So
oh,
that's
wow.
How good the song was. Yeah.
Thank
so,
you.
Still don't like the original, but I like your version. So you did a good job.
I actually have a hard time singing along to the original now because I like swap in the wrong. Like they're like mixed in together in my head. So I'll swap in my verses and accidentally find myself singing my version of like, that doesn't make any sense. But
yeah, no, I can totally understand that being a thing.
The song is Wrecking Ball by Miley Cyrus for those who were
And
curious.
What did you rename it to be?
Stabby Love.
Stabby Love.
Yeah. Because I found both of my parodies thus far have had some sort of like surprise twist element to it. So I have to be really careful about the name because I don't want to give it away in the name of the song.
Right.
So I kind of like name them pretty generic things to not give away what the song is about before people experience it. Yeah. Yeah.
That's very clever. I do not think that far ahead when I name my parodies. So that's a tip I'm going to take for next year's contest.
I don't name them until like literally I'm submitting them or putting them up on YouTube. Like that's when they get a name. It's like, okay, I got to put a name in, but I can't give it away. So what's it going to be? So it's usually kind of a name night. Name lame name.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah.
But I mean, it works. So keep doing it. Yeah. Obviously, I know you quite well. We've been doing Threefold Talk for, we're in our third year of doing that.
Yeah, we which are. Is
amazing. And one of the funniest things about Threefold Talk is the Meluendos. How many times we've had weaponry and daggers and spears just appear on screen, sometimes through the hands of other people, where yes. they just turn up and give you like six different daggers out of nowhere. For a long time, you were the only one that had daggers. I think mm-hmm. we all had random, I think we pretended to have objects. We're slowly collecting, this sounds really bad, we're slowly collecting weapons over time. you and Bane and Shead both have spears, identical spears.
Yeah.
Leia has the very, very beautiful dagger. You 3D printed us all daggers, one of which sits on my wall up here because it broke and I had to glue it back together. you know, the stabby nature of Threefold Talk has a lot of thank yous to give to you for that. To have something like Meluendo be a thing on the show, like, how does that feel being? Because I feel like you've incorporated that into how you play Mel, just full stop, let alone just on the show.
Ooh, yeah, good. That's true. You know, it just kind of developed naturally with the way all of us interact together. And, you know, everyone has such cool and interesting personalities on the show. And we all, like, you know, banter off each other. And it's almost like you know, at first we were kind of like getting to know each other and developing our rhythms and that sort of stuff. And everyone was trying different things, trying to figure out like how super ideal they should be or how real life they should be and balancing all of those things out. You know, you have those friends who you don't see for like a really long time and you can just like settle into a conversation with them, like no time has passed. And obviously we see each other every week, but like that's how our show feels to me. Like it's just this sense of familiarity and we know each other's rhythms and we know how to like tease someone off to do something like instinctively. And I think it's a beautiful relationship that we've formed with each other because it highlights the things that clearly everyone enjoys the most about doing the show. And we know that about each other, so we want to give them opportunities to do that. And I think for Meluendos, everybody does the same thing. They like say something and just like give it a pause, give it a moment for me to just like pop in. And sometimes I think people say things particularly worded in a particular way just to give me the opportunity to say something ridiculous afterwards.
Oh, we absolutely do that.
And that's what I'm saying. That's a beautiful thing. That's like it's such a giving give and take relationship in order to like entertain ourselves and hopefully entertain Voltis as well. But I think we spend a lot of time just entertaining each other.
This is true.
And so I when I come up with a Meluendo, it's like what's gonna make Rob laugh or Bane and Shead break or Leia just like spit her wine out? Like what is it? Like what's the right phrasing that's gonna just like dig it? I don't know.
And we get the Foldies doing it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even funnier when like Doyne is doing it in the chats.
Yeah.
Because everyone's taking a turn at it, and it just sometimes it just can spiral, and it's such a funny thing. I love doing it.
it's pretty great, and it's funny because that's kind of bled over a little bit into real life. Because in the 3 years that we've been doing the show, Joanne and I have two kids. Our kids are our oldest has like started into the teen years, so we've. We've always, Doyne and I have always like said things to each other that the kids just like went over their heads. But now our 15-year-old is like catching on to the stuff that we say to each other. And he's just like either mortified and embarrassed or like laughs his head off because he finally gets like the ridiculous things that we're saying to each other in front of them all the time that they like the kids never got before, you know?
That's amazing. So do you think when you get asked to play Mel in the TV show? Because that's still a campaign that some of us are pushing out there.
I'm going to have to work out a lot if that was the case.
I've when we did the stabby transition video with all the foldies, which I think we need to do again at some point, to be honest. That was great fun.
Oh, yeah.
Like stabbing and passing things back and forth. I can't remember exactly, but it was great fun. I do remember your athleticism in that because you got attacked by a blanket and there was flipping and spinning afterwards. It was don't knock yourself, Mel. That was very good.
Thank you.
Yeah. And everybody in the show goes through like exercise regime and stuff. So, you know, like stunt work and blah, blah. So, you know, don't think that you can't do it. So when you get to play Mel in the TV show, do you think you will try and take some of your sort of Meluendo persona
Ooh.
To play her on the TV show?
Okay, if I answer that seriously, from what I've seen from the show so far, they've played it really deadpan and really straight, except for when Avienda said to Perrin, "Don't worry, I won't attack you in a fit of lust," right?
Right, yes.
And then she laughed. But otherwise, the humor has been pretty straight on. And I am definitely a terrible Aiel in the fact that there is nothing deadpan about me unless I'm trying really hard to be deadpan. Like, all of the Aiel in the books, like, people don't know if they're showing emotion, their faces are blank and all of that stuff. That's the opposite of me. So I would try, if I'm seriously, I would try to blend in to the culture that the show is trying to develop about the Aiel. So if the Aiel is going to be deadpan and the humor is like more subdued and understated, then that's what I would do. But
okay.
Yeah, if I got to be my version of Mel that I developed for Threefold Talk on the show, then yeah, absolutely. It would be like, they would just be flying out my mouth left and right, for sure.
I need to see that blooper reel.
No, I would want them all to be on the show. They would, maybe.
No,
maybe...
We make everyone else break character. That would be, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that could be the reason why all the rest of the Aiel hate the Shido is because none of them are deadpan and they're all like out there all the time. And like, I mean, Savannah's kind of like that, right? Like she's
very flashy,
like,
you know,
obnoxious,
yeah,
and flashy. So maybe all Shido are like that. So we could make the case that something tweaked in the genealogy of the Shido that all the like exuberant extroverts all ended up in the Shido clan. All hidden up in the like northwest corner of the Threefold Land, and that's where they hang out. And then all of the deadpan, more focused, serious warriors all ended up everywhere else. Be totally fine.
That is a great, great suggestion. That might actually be my headcanon going forward now.
Why are Shido like that?
I mean, just speak of Cooladin. He is so over the top in everything.
It's true. I mean, that's a really good point. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be an interesting choice.
I love this. This is, we're going to have to talk more about that at some point. Let's get a little serious about the Aiel because we can't joke the whole time. We could. But I have other questions and they're a smidge serious. And I'm aware that there's someone else listening live right now who might be answering some of these questions later on. So they might be taking notes. So I'm going to have to turn some of the questions up. But a big moment for a lot of people, whether they love the Aiel or not, a huge moment for us in season one was the beginning of episode 7, the cold open with the Blood Snow, which I still describe as pretty much one of the best pieces of cinematography I think I've ever seen in my life.
Agreed.
With the fight scene and that. As someone who roleplays Aiel on Twitter, who has done that with, is it The Mud? doing the MUDs back in the day,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. What did it mean to you to see that on screen?
I think that introduction was everything that I hoped an introduction to this culture could be, except for you didn't get to see the humanity of how they, you didn't really get to see Jito play into it. But if you were going to introduce a culture of amazing warriors who are dedicated to, you know, fighting to the bitter end, spitting in Sight Blinder's eye and all of that, then there's no better way than doing it with Magdalena Satovia. She, I think part of what made that scene work so well is because she was her own stunt double. So you didn't have to have the cuts that you normally have in a fight scene where you're cutting between the actor and the stunt double doing the cool things. So the fluidity of the scene could be shown almost like you might watch a ballet or you might watch a dance, because they didn't have to cut the camera. So you could watch the whole thing play out. It could build without those cuts, creating these kind of like artificial breaks in your focus, artificial breaks in the way that you watched it, because of how amazing that fight was choreographed and how much she did with just her face. And I hope we get more stunt actors as Aiel in future parts of the show, because it was amazing to have that moment with her, and now we're all obsessed with her. And
yes,
I could watch her do stunts in anything. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know,
I can verify that it is more impressive in person than it is on the screen. So
yeah. I can't believe we got to meet her. That was
cool. Like the biggest surprise in the world. Literally the episode that just came out today, Jen and Meg asked me about the whole trip, and that was one thing. And I joked about spotting her before anybody else. Like, I see the idea first. But you know, it was so good funny. Scat. Just like being able to actually meet her was just like pretty incredible. And she was so like just so shy and humble about everything. And she's like, "Oh, I'm just, you know, just doing my job and doing the stunts and, you know." And it was incredible.
I mean, I say this a lot, but I just feel really lucky to be alive at a time where we get to see this show be put on TV and it done so well. It's like having your dreams be written out on the page and then displayed on the screen for everybody else to see your dreams too. It's just, it's amazing. You know, I spent so much time just enjoying exploring that world as a role player online, but it's not the same as seeing the work of so many people come together to bring it to life on film. I feel like we're just incredibly lucky, and I hope it keeps going for as long as it can, because I've been enjoying every minute of it.
I almost every minute. There are moments I don't like.
Well, yes. I mean, but, yes. Yeah. But yes. Yeah.
No,
I never walk away saying I hated that episode.
No, me neither.
Like I will walk away being like, that was really hard to see. That was really hard to watch. But then like after digesting it, like there's so much about it I appreciate and understand why they made the choices they did. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
It's clearly done with such love and faith and earnest intention of representing a beautiful work of art to the best that they can.
I agree. So that was all the Aiel we got in season one.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's all we were going to get, good choice. Well done,
Ray.
Right? Well done, Kieran, for choosing the bolt. Huge expense. Well worth it. Well done. A little different in season two, though, because we got a huge amount of Aiel in comparison.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. And there we did get some discussion of Jito. We did get some Aiel humor. we did get to see Aiel in action fighting. How was all of that for you, seeing those moments?
I think it was just, it was very joyful. And I really appreciated how cleverly they worked in so many forward-looking hints into the depth of the Aiel culture without knocking anybody over the head with it, right? They're trying to introduce cultures like the characters in the books got introduced to them. So there's just like a little bit of Jito, a little bit of humor, a little bit of, you know, Aiel just being like, nah, 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 step back, Wetlander, I got this, you know, a little bit of like not understanding why there's so much water. You know, you've got all of these things that they just sat on the table and let you look at or not, you know, and let people see it or not. And then just like laying the seeds. It was like they sowed the seeds of everything that hopefully is going to happen in season 3.
And how did you feel about, because we did see a big moment between Avienda, Bane, and Chiad, which demonstrated Jito.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of thoughts about that when I watched
it.
I remember we had a conversation about it.
Yeah.
But obviously, as time is, you know, you watch things back later, you rewatch, you have discussions. Like, how do you feel about how our first sort of proper demonstration of Jito, how did that come across to you on screen? Do you think it was good, needed work? You know, like, what are your thoughts about it?
Yeah, I think for where the show was at the time when that episode was released, you're playing with a season where there's a lot of things happening. You're trying to fit two books worth of content in. You've got to make a choice on how to show a new concept in a way that is complete enough in the storyline that it was sharing to like make you be like, this is different. This is clearly a different way to think about responsibility, and yet not leave so many open questions that it distracts you from everything else that's happening in the episode, right? So from that perspective, I understand why they made the choice they did. But clearly, if I was making a show about the Wheel of Time, there would be much more moments to like explain that nuance. But I'm also, I have to remember that I'm looking at the show from the perspective of someone who has been through all of book 4 and book 5 and all the depth of Aiel culture that we get in those books. But when they were first introduced, you know, we just knew that they were afraid of water and they were fighters. Like, that's really what we knew about them, right? And so we got a little deeper and deeper and deeper. So I appreciate that they put that in there, that they gave us that moment to introduce that. I agree with you that it might make people interpret the Aiel as only a violent culture.
Right.
Right. But I think for the period that we were in the show, that it was the right choice for the show because they didn't have the time to go into the depth of it. So they just needed to like lay a seed, like I was saying earlier. And then we will clearly get more of it. We will get more understanding, I hope. In season 3.
Well, season 3 is all of having a mind blank now, book 4.
Shadow Rising. Yeah.
Shadow Rising. Thank you. It happens to me all the time. You can tell me book titles. I can't tell you book numbers. With the exception of the first 3 and number 14, A Memory of Light. I still can't even get like, I still can't even get 12 and 13 in the right order. so that should be obviously pretty heavy Aiel theme. Yeah. We are going to the waste. There's been
the threefold like, land.
The threefold land. Yes, my apologies. I am the token wetlander for a reason. We've seen like what series released a script that they think is like a audition for the part of Cooladin. So, you know, we're getting a lot of that storyline. So it should be pretty heavy Aiel season, which will be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm so stoked.
Yeah. Is there, and you can answer something specifically for season three from Shadow Rising, or you could give us something later on. But in terms of Aiel scenes, whether they're on screen or off screen in the book, because we've had a little bit of both now, or some tweaking of some of them. For example, like Avienda being in the cage was Gorl in the cage in the books, but we're still pairing rescuing. In terms of Aiel scenes on screen or off screen, is there one you're like, at some point, we absolutely have to see this? Like, is there a scene with the Aiel you're like, we cannot have this taken out?
I mean, well, the real obvious one is they need the history of the Aiel, right?
Right.
You know, you need the glass columns or some version of the glass columns to help connect Rand to the Aiel so that it's clear why he needs to be where he is and why he needs them and why they connect themselves to them. What I really want to see, and this is a Fires of Heaven scene, but much like they gave us the Tigraine fight, right? Much like they gave us Blood Snow, I want them to give us Matt versus Culloden. I want to see it. I don't want it to be off screen. I want those two to fight, and I want it to be like a big epic, like one-on-one something to happen that ultimately ends up in Cooladin getting taken down. Because despite the fact that I play a Shido, I do play a Shido that did not choose to follow Cooladin, because again, back to the backstories, I have this idea that maybe potentially one of the reasons that, you know, obviously Melindra decided to turn towards the dark before she met Matt. So maybe one of the reasons that Melindra decided to turn towards the dark was because she was mad that the Shido kept nominating. The Shido wise men kept putting these terrible men in positions of power over their clan, and they kept making terrible choices. And she wanted to figure out how to put a woman like in charge for real, and not in the way that Savannah's in charge, but in the way that like a woman could be a clan chief. Okay. And so she was upset at the choices of choosing the best man option in the Shido is Cooladin. Like, come on.
Like, yeah, it's a good point.
There's clearly a lot more women much more capable of leading the Shido than Cooladin, and yet because of the stupid rules, women weren't clan chiefs. So that's another theory that I have, that Mel wanted to be a clan chief.
That's a fun theory. I like that idea. Honestly, full disclosure, when you said a scene from Fires of Heaven, I honestly assumed you meant like a naked battle scene.
And then
that would be hilarious. But then you gave us the much cooler and much better option of Matt versus Cooladin.
I would say naked battle, like naked Trolloc fight, would be fun. But I also feel like a little bit, I think the show has been really respectful of not having unnecessary gratuitous nudity.
Yes.
And except for making Daniel Henney get in a bathtub, like what other.
So Daniel Henney should be doing the naked Trolloc fighting, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe there's a sweat tent and Daniel Henney like runs out.
My roommate who's listening right now is also agreeing with us, folks. So.
I think the show has been really respectful of challenging all of those tropes in TV, you know? Yes.
Game of Thrones made it very much like, oh, you can't have high fantasy and things like that unless there's lots of nudity. And of course, that has to be, you know, generally female nudity, although.
Yeah, exactly.
Game of Thrones did do male nudity now and again. It was like minimal and pointless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Wheel of Time is definitely trying to thread a different needle, right? They're trying to challenge the the tropes that, you know, are not necessarily women friendly within TV production in general, right? Mm-hmm. So in order to do that, you might have to pull back on some of the things that Robert Jordan wrote, which are really funny, really funny. But in like in the reality of implementing them, probably not so funny. Maybe we'll get allusions to that. Maybe we'll get like half dressed people or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't like, if I'm really being honest, I don't want naked people fighting.
Yeah, maybe we'll get like that scene and like, you know, Matt's in some kind of like pair of shorts or something and Mel's there, you know, in some kind of wrap or something giving.
Or just like only her shirt or whatever it is.
Yeah. And yeah. She, you know, the fight carries on and, you know, she's, you know, he's there in just shorts. She's there in a very long top of some kind that covers everything except her legs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And, you know, and that would be great as well, because it would definitely show the, well, you just rushed out in whatever you're wearing type thing.
Yeah.
That's something or nothing.
I think the show is doing a really good job trying to respect the performers that are behind the scenes that are doing it, and not everyone is comfortable with that, and probably most people aren't. I mean, but this maybe they'll find actors who think that's totally great and they want to.
Maybe.
But I don't know if I need it.
No, that, I agree. That's fair. Like you say, we've had Daniel Henney, so, you know, just more of that, folks. Like, we got the bottom half in season one. We got the top half in season two.
Yeah, we got the top half in season one also.
We did, yeah, but it was like, kind of like there was a heavy focus on the top half in season one. It was like the whole thing. And then, like, Varen's there, like, you know, oh, not Varen, sorry.
Adelaus.
Adelaus being like, out the way, Vlad. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes, so.
So maybe, ridiculous.
Maybe we'll get the whole hog in season three. You never know.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, right. Maybe. But I think the show is doing a good job of just like ignoring some of Robert Jordan's weird predilections for naked women, you know, which is fine. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, agreed. Very much agreed. A couple of easy questions now to round us out, Mel. Like, you know, hopefully not quite so tough ones for you. As mentioned earlier, I am the token wetlander. That is my role on Threefold Talk. That is one of my aliases throughout the fandom. As folks, it's not spelled T-O-K-E-N, it's T-O-H hyphen? No.
Apostrophe.
Apostrophe, thank you. K-E-N. There's a token wetlander. So I always have toe to meet. That's, you know, this is why I make weekly journeys out to the Threefold Land to hang out with these awesome people. And, you know, I keep just building up toe, but I'll get there one day, maybe. You never know. But Mel, what is your preferred method for meeting any toe that you might incur in your life?
Ooh, real life me or Mel me?
Both.
Ooh.
I feel like both's a good option. That's definitely like a both answer there when you ask me that
question. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Interesting. Well, I mean, clearly Mel likes meeting her toe by getting stabbed.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, that is fair.
Mel would be totally fine with being brought back to life by the Dark One and getting stabbed again.
Right.
Like, that feels like the only way to meet a toe as deep as her toe is.
That definitely feels very on the point of the spear for Mel.
Yeah. In real life, I actually really struggle with admitting when I'm wrong or when I've made a mistake. Because I'm kind of a prideful person. So if I force myself to admit that I've made a mistake and apologize in situations where I'm being prideful, like that's a very good example of me trying to meet my toe, because it makes me very uncomfortable, and I am not I'm not necessarily inclined to do that, because what my instinct is to try to like pretend it was something else or walk it off or ignore it and not say anything. So So when I force myself to acknowledge that I've made a mistake and say it out loud, then that's a pretty good example of me meeting my toe, because that can be really hard for me when I've done something really dumb.
Well, thank you, Mel. I didn't think you were going to share anything that I suppose personal with us. So
yeah, well, you asked.
So I just thought you might be like, I don't know. I make Dwayne 2 helpings of dessert. I don't know.
no, that would be. That would not be me meeting Toe, because he's the cook and I am not. He's okay. An amazing
chef. I forget that you take lessons from Lamel. So
yeah. He's an amazing chef. I am an acceptable, like, my food is not inedible. My food is not inedible, but it's nowhere near as good as his food is. And he is a very nice, kind, lovely man, and willing to cook for our family most of the time. So I do on occasion make some pretty bomb ass desserts, but usually I reserve that for like holidays and things like that.
Fair.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I've just seen Charlie's comment in chat, like, preferred method for meeting Toe is like, what is your love language? That's actually not a bad comparison in that question.
That's harder. Yeah. I feel like preferred method for meeting Toe is like, you have to, if you're really understanding Toe, you have to admit the thing that makes you feel the worst to make amends for something you've done wrong, right? Like, that's true. You know, feel the worst, but is the hardest thing for you to do when you're admitting you've done something wrong. So
that is true.
I think that's very different. No offense, Charlie. I think that's very different. No. What is your love language? Because you have to admit something that's hard for you.
Yeah, right? I get that. Yeah. Hopefully not a tough final question.
Okay.
Because I felt like that was an easy one that I was going to ask, and then you, like, it was a harder one to answer than I thought it was going to be. So hopefully this one does fit in the category of easier to answer. But what, of all the IEL values that you could possibly take from how they lived their lives, the culture, the examples we see from the characters in the book, if you take any values from them into your everyday life, like, what would be the most important one to you?
I think probably is being willing to stand up for what you believe in. Understanding that the risks of standing up for what you believe in, could be dangerous to you, and it's still worth it. I think that's the part of the IO culture that I try to take with me and try to hold in my heart, especially when I'm faced with really challenging situations, that it's worth standing up for it, and we shouldn't look away, and we shouldn't step aside. We should take a step forward and put ourselves in the battle, you know, put ourselves on the front lines, because it's worth it. That's my favorite part.
That's beautiful. I love that. That is, and so true. That is all of my questions. They will change, folks. There will be some that change character or like guest specific, because over the following weeks, I will have Roof Mistress Lair, Tigraine, and Bane and Shea joining me over the following few recordings. So you can get like I was going to do like a whole month of IEL, and then like I just goofed up my recording schedule. And so like, it's just going to be it's going to be into a little bit of February as a result. But yeah, I hope you've enjoyed this first little insight to what it's like to be IEL from one of our experts in the community. So Mel, I thank you for your time. I thank you for sharing. You've not that I thought you would come and give me like surface level answers and joke and bullshit and stuff like that, but you know, you really
you wanted me to joke and bullshit. Sorry, I brought the wrong mouth.
No,
that was in my bucket.
Oh, okay, sorry. but no, you really, you know, you shared a lot with us today, and I very much appreciate that. So thank you. I hope you had fun, even though I've asked you some of those questions. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. It was really fun.
Good. So yeah, folks, so 3 more weeks of this to enjoy. I'm excited to hear what everyone else says. I can't wait to listen back to this and edit it. So I look forward to everyone hearing this. Thank you to those that hung out live. Bane and Shead was here earlier, but ducked out when we got to the questions to not be spoiled about some of the things I could ask.
Can't wait to hear what she says.
Appreciate that one, Bane and Shead, for that. Because it would have spoiled. You're not meant to be prepared for some of these questions. But yeah, look forward to just hanging out with you more on Threefold Talk Mail. And just
it's one of my favorite parts of the week.
It's one of my favorite too, even though I just keep acquiring toe through the process.
we all have toe.
This is true. Everyone has toe from time to time. But until next time, folks, when we get more Aiel, please go out and find yourself some love, water, and shade.
Thank you so much for listening to Malkia's Wrap Up. If you'd like to support me, please head over to Patreon, where you can sign up and listen to the podcast as I record each week at any level. And thank you so much. Please follow the account on Twitter, join me on YouTube once in a while, and leave a comment and tell me what you liked and what I missed, because I'm sure there was plenty. But until next time, folks, please find love, water, and shade.